Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
welcome back to another edition of Leave the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr.
No, I'm
Felipe.
Your host. No, I'm your host, Felipe
Leone.
My co-host and my co-host, David Duenas.
Oh, man, do we have a lot to talk about. Hey, let me get this going here, okay, this conversation I want to have with you here for the listeners, you know, so they can kind of feel that they're a part of this this process of how you screwed up last week on Cinco de Mayo weekend for everybody, okay? So, Friday, they had the weigh-in. Friday, we see the Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. and Saul Canelo Alvarez's weigh-in, right? And this is like, what time was this, dude, when I called you? It was like, 8, 9 o'clock?
Was it that late?
Friday. I think so, because I think you were getting –
No, no, it was earlier than. The fight started really early.
Okay. So I call Felipe up here, and Felipe goes – hey, dude, I think I'm changing my pick. I think I'm going to go with Julio Cesar Chavez. I swear to you, as soon as you said that, in my head, I heard that, wonk, wonk, wonk. I was like, that's it. He lost. So your new nickname is no longer My Little Pony. It's Felipe the Jinx Leon. There you go.
Please.
That's your new nickname. You jinxed
Please.
Everything. So I got to eat a little crow here because – but you know what pisses me off?
Oh, you're going to eat a little crow. Look at this.
Look.
You're going to eat a little crow. I don't think you should be eating a lot of much of anything, Dave, with that little pouch you got carrying around.
Right now, it's an 8-pack. It's almost down to the 6-pack. Trust me. I've been working out.
God.
Every day, Felipe. Yeah. I'm even drinking green tea right now, you know, with a little bit of citrus. But... all right, this is not a commercial. Let's finish it up, okay? So, dude, I don't know what happened here. And let me tell you this, because as you know, I personally talk to the people. I actually, when I'm at work, I talk to people on various occasions about the fight game because I promote it like that, Felipe. And I like you. You know, people don't even know that you do podcasts. You know, but people know that I do a podcast here on my lots when I go to work.
Well, yeah, so, you're the man of the people, David.
I am the man of the people. I am. And so anyways, let me go into this. Okay. So I show up to, you know, the whole, and then first of all, I had a great weekend. It was my birthday weekend. I had a fantastic time, even though the fight did let us down. Okay. Because you had one guy that showed up being a Mexican and then the other guy didn't even show up, which was really sad because he was a human punching bag. The only one I think that probably would have been happy, the only one that was happy of the performance of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., Felipe, was probably Brandon Rios. Because now Brandon Rios goes, hey, I'm not the guy that was a walking punching bag anymore. Then the person that took that title is Junior. And he did. But talking to some folks, dude, and immediately I did see this on social media. Some folks were saying that, you know, this was rigged. This was all set up for the Triple G walkout. The Triple G and Canelo announcement. And at first I was like, nah. But going to the lots and speaking to some fight fans, dude, they really felt that they got robbed. That Julio Cesar Chavez took a laydown. But I was like, yeah, you know, I could see where you're coming from because you're a paying customer. And these are people that are not avid boxing fans. You know, they're not guys that are going to tune into every card. They didn't know anybody about the undercards. You know what I mean? They just knew about Julio Cesar Chavez and Canelo. So when they're telling me, like, hey, I feel like I got ripped off, you know? This guy didn't even throw a punch. Why did he? And some folks pointed this out where they felt this was a rigged fight where Julio Cesar Chavez was coming forward. Canelo was inviting him. He took a couple shots at Canelo, and then he just backed off. Now, I don't like to be the guy that goes, yeah, man, you know, boxing is rigged, but – we do have a long history of things being rigged. But needless to say, Canelo did his job. He went out there. He performed. He looked really good at that weight. But then again, you're always going to look good against somebody that's not going to throw punches back right back at you, right?
Of course, you know. You are going to look good in that situation. But we can't take anything away from Canelo. I mean, he did his job. He went in there. He made the
Absolutely.
Weight. He worked out. He was disciplined. Chavez Jr. was disciplined as well, but obviously at this point, we found out, we realized that he was being disciplined to make the weight. Now, after the fight, a lot of stories came out. He allegedly he mentions that he didn't eat the last week, that basically he was just working out to make the weight, which, you know, it probably is true. But, you know, it kind of came across that he really didn't want to pay any of that fine of the $1 million, because after, I don't know if you read this, David, but afterwards it came out that it wasn't only $1 million. It was $1 million up to a certain weight. And
right.
then after a certain, I think it was 156 and change, it popped up to $2 million. So he was really would have been in trouble if he would have really came in too heavy for that fight. Well, it is what it is. I think the guy that I feel the worst for in this fight is Julio Cesar Chavez's dad, because he, again, put his neck out for his son, this time Chavez Jr., because he has done it for the other son, Omar Chavez. But right now, Omar Chavez, you could only imagine that he's going to get the best present in Christmas come December because of that knockout that he scored over Canelo's brother. But I feel bad for Chavez's dad because you know, he's put his neck out there time and time again for this guy, and this guy just comes up short. And being a dad, I mean, I'm not a dad. You're a dad, so you know what it feels like. I mean, I'm sure that your kids have never disappointed you this bad. But, you know, there's been times, maybe, I don't know, that things have happened. And it's tough to stop loving your kids, right? And obviously, Chavez's dad is not going to stop loving his son. That is his son. But damn, like, to be completely publicly humiliated by this, it must be tough, especially for him, who he's such a winner and he's such a strong personality, that it must be really tough for him to face the music.
Well, you know, as I've mentioned, I got to eat crow. I did pick Julio to win this fight. I thought that definitely maybe 60% would be enough to put damage on Canelo, but we saw no percentage of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. showing up for this fight. But the person that has to eat the most crow is his father, like you just mentioned right now. He stuck his neck out for his son. It's a fatherly love. Of course, you're not going to, you know, you're going to be very critical. And he's been very highly critical of his son. But at the end of the day,
he had drank the Kool-Aid, and he was right there, you know,
well,
every step of the way.
Well, I don't think he drank the Kool-Aid.
He believed in his son a lot in this fight.
You know, you have that whole saying, you know, where you see a lot of young girls now say, well, I'm a ride or die chick and this and that. Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. is a ride or die chick to his son. He rode and didn't die with this one big time, you know. But, you know, it is sad to see a legend, one of the greatest, you know, Mexican fighters to ever lace gloves, be humiliated by his own son. And his son didn't seem to be bothered one bit. Not one bit about it, you know. Got a big, good chunk of money. He got massaged by some escorts, right?
Well, there's also the claim that he got massaged before the fight. I mean, not necessarily by escorts, but that's one of the things that Nacho stated in the press, that he went out and got a massage a couple hours before the fight. Funny thing is that I actually, listen to this. After the fight, I know a masseuse here in Tijuana who has worked with quite a number of fighters, including Eric Morales and a bunch of others. And I asked him, you know, after the fight, what'd you think about that? What'd you think about that whole massage thing? And he says, you know what? I've seen it both ways. I've performed massages on a couple of fighters before the fight. And I tell him, hey man, I don't know how you're going to react to this. You're asking for it. I wash my hands of it. It's up to you. And he said that on one night he massaged two fighters and they performed completely different that same night. One of them was more loose. He was he had better reflexes. The guy said afterwards that he felt great, that he felt like he didn't feel tight, that he felt like he could let his punches go. And the other guy, same thing with Chavez Jr., that he just didn't throw his punches, and he talked about it after. He says, you know what, I felt so relaxed in there that I didn't really care. I didn't care one way or the other if I threw punches or not. So according to this masseuse, I respected here in Tijuana. I mean,
you know,
every fighter
but,
in both
right.
stadium, he said it could go either way.
No, I agree with you. Certain things work for different fighters, and they react a certain way. But you don't try it on the biggest fight in your life. You know, this is something you try on a lesser opponent, in my opinion.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You never try new shit. You know. Now that being said, and you talk to this guy, I think it's safe to say, Felipe, you probably asked him later if you ever need an oil guy. You're his man. Is that what you're saying? You know, you're gonna
be
the massager.
I kind of did, you know, I did do that, David. He said, you know what? I had this one guy, his name was David Duenas, and that guy was great. He just disappeared one day with a guy that I was with another masseuse client of mine. The guy just disappeared, and I don't know where he ended up at. So, hey, David,
Hey, Fight Fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. You want to talk some boxing here with myself, Dave Duenas, and Felipe the Jinx? You certainly can. Don't forget to help us out with our Patreon. Every dollar counts with us. It continues our shows and continues other things. We apologize. We didn't do the boxing spotlight. We were going to do it, but we just figured, you know what? There wasn't a whole lot going on this week except for Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there.
Let's be frank, David.
You didn't want to do it.
Let's be frank.
I was ready.
You know, we're very honest with our audience here on Leaving in the
I
Ring.
Am.
And
I am.
We all are. And last Wednesday, it was Mexican Mother's Day. Mother's Day in Mexico is May 10th, not like it is in the United States, which is like the second Sunday of May. David,
right.
obviously, being, he says he's Mexican, so I'm going to go with
it. Oh, I'm Mexican.
You know, he had his mom and he had his wife, and he said he went to dinner. But I got some inside information where, you know, David does the dishes, he does the vacuuming. But on this day, the special day, he had to do a pedicure for his wife, so he couldn't do the show.
And I've gotten pretty good with it. So she rewarded me with green tea. I got to drink green tea on here. Let's get down to the rundown here, Mr. Jinx.
All right, let's go. Well, we kind of touched bases on it, but let's go official with it. With more than 20,000 fans inside the T-Mobile Arena and millions watching on HBO pay-per-view, it's been announced, not announced officially, but it has been mentioned here and there that the fight did sell. It's not a million pay-per-views, a little bit over, maybe 1.3. The big mega event of the year turned into a dud when a weight-drained Julio César Chávez Jr. did not put up a fight over 12 rounds while Saúl Canelo Álvarez was not able to score the knockout. Scores were 120-108 three times. The saving grace of the night was a WWE-like announcement of the Triple G Canelo scheduled bout set for September 16th. So I think we said enough of what we wanted to say. Obviously, we're going to take some calls, and we'll hear what you guys want to say about this Julio César Chávez Jr. Saúl Canelo Álvarez fight. So we can move on to the next note here, because it does have to do with Triple G Canelo. Finally, after circling around each other for over a year, the much-awaited bout between Gennady Granovich Golovkin versus Saúl Canelo Álvarez set for Saturday, September 16th, at a venue to be announced hopefully in the next 2 weeks. As far as it has been announced, the fight will be right at the 160-pound limit with the rematch clause if Golovkin wins. No rematch if Álvarez does. No word if all of three of Gennady Golovkin's titles will be on the line. David, you know, I was at the venue. You were at home, you know, hopefully not passed out by then. What did you think about the whole, you know, let me tell you what I thought real quick. Give me 2 minutes. Prior to that, I think we had mentioned it on the show prior that it had been announced that Gennady Golovkin was not going to attend the fight. They did a note in the press and that he was not going to be attending. It looked to be a smoke screen. Afterwards, we've heard in interviews with Tom Loeffler that Gennady Golovkin didn't believe that the fight was actually done because he thought it was another ploy by Canelo to get him there and go through the whole after the fight hoopla. But he didn't believe it until after the contract was signed. Then he believed it, and then they presented this idea of doing this whole announcement. Golovkin was in all the way. There's reports that Canelo was kind of hesitant about it. So they asked Golovkin not to show up to Las Vegas until Saturday. So that way he wouldn't steal a little bit of Canelo's thunder in this big fight weekend on May 6th against Chavez Jr. And then when we were in the venue, they showed Golovkin on the screen. Obviously, the crowd went nuts. He's very liked by the Mexican community, which was the majority of the people at the venue. But then, you know, after the Max Kellerman interview, and then when Saul Canelo Alvarez uttered those now infamous words, what was he said? You're next, my friend.
You're next, my friend.
Yeah, you're
next,
my friend.
I was born ready.
So then, you know, Golovkin comes out, the song comes on, and it was crazy, man. It was really crazy. So that's what we saw there. What were your thoughts when you were sitting at home, you know, doing the
pedicure? You know what? Listening to everybody and seeing what everybody's reaction, there was mixed, you know, there was mixed reactions to the whole WWE display. And I got to tell you, man, I think that, you know, as a hardcore fan, like in terms of like my grandfather, you know, who got me into the sport, for him, it's probably a turnoff. You know what I mean? Like they don't really care for this, you know, theatrical, whatever, like, you know, this circus type of, you know, dealing, how they presented it to us, you know, the old timers, they just want it done. You know what I mean? They just want to hear it after that it's been set. But I think we are in a generation where they kind of need a little bit of like that flamboyant, you know, introduction. And so I sat back and I got to tell you, I kind of liked it. You know, I liked that it led us to now look forward to their next pay-per-view, because, you know, who's been doing it for quite some time is the UFC and Dana White. As soon as the fight was over, they immediately announced the next pay-per-view to have their audience in attendance and watching, the viewers. It was already a mental note that, oh, we have another pay-per-view or a big fight coming up on this date. It was no longer go back and check the websites, no longer to hear by word of mouth. It was delivered and sealed. So I like that. I don't know about you, but I actually felt like, okay, cool. Now I can clear my schedule on that weekend there and not go do anything to make sure that either I'm home to watch the fight or I go to somebody else's.
I liked it too. You know, I hear what you're saying about your grandpa and being the old school. But back then, I mean, there wasn't everything that there is now. There wasn't Facebook. It was just newspapers. And if your dad, if your grandpa wasn't in the L.A. area and didn't go to the Olympics, he wasn't able to see the fights, maybe not even been able to listen to them on the radio or seen them on TV, and all he had to do was wait for the paper the next day and read the report, you know? But now,
you know,
here's
the thing. Like, I'm pretty sure you agree with me, and I'm pretty sure your relatives, too, that are older – or like this, but you know, like the old Mexican guys, the old Mexican people, like even my wife's mom, my wife's father, my father-in-law, is very, very quiet. Doesn't say a whole lot of words. I could probably sum up the amount of hours I've ever spoken to this man in the past 20 plus years that I've been with my wife. Okay. But there, you know, like
he probably doesn't like you.
No, he loves me. Trust me. And listen, and my grandfather used to get very turned off by Eric Morales, Fernando Vargas, you know, guys like that. My grandfather used to get really upset and go like, you know, these guys, they talk too much. They just need to handle their business in the ring. And he wasn't the only one, like, you know, went to, you know, like my with my dad and like my uncles, they all felt that way. They really didn't care for like the Hector Camacho rants, the Pernell Whitaker rants. You know, they didn't want to hear none of that nonsense. What they wanted to see was you go in and do the fisticuffs performance. That's it. Very cut and dry. Very, very, you know, very simple. And you know, in terms of the conversation, they said what they meant with very little words, and it got across. That's how they expected their sport to be conducted in boxing. Be very simple. Just take care of it. Get it across.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree, but you know, it's a different era now, and
oh, I agree. No, I'm
it's
just
a
saying.
Different era, and you know, to me, I like that Eric Morales, you know,
I did too.
Toughness, you know, that you know, not taking anything from anybody. Same thing with Fernando Vargas. I mean, sometimes it blows up in your face, you know. I mean, it did for Chavez Jr. it did for Vargas, you know, when he fought Oscar De La Hoya. But I like it. I like it. I think that's what boxing needs. It needs characters, you know. Ricardo
right.
Mayorga, even at this point, he's in his 40s and about 40 pounds overweight. People still, I mean, not so much, but people still are interested because of what he says. You know, I like those kind of guys. Maybe you know, with a little bit of a twinkle in their eye where they kind of, you don't know if they really mean it or they don't. You know, you don't know if it's part of the
right.
show or they're actually meaning it. I like that. I think it makes for better storylines, you know, not the whole. I mean, there's certain fighters out there that you could.
Well, it gives you a person to root for more. You know what I mean? I think that what builds is like, okay, perfect example is like Canelo. The way he answers or
yeah.
the way his cockiness, there's a turn off to it. Where I was speaking to a lot of Mexicanos that were rooting for Julio Cesar Chavez, and they really kind of expressed, they're like, "Ay, man, to me, you know, it's just the way he says things, like the whole dickish way he says things to when he was talking back to Triple G, you know, like mediocre's for luck is for the mediocre, right? Is what he said.
Yeah.
And I was like, I actually like that he has more kind of that mean streak. And I think, too, because he's kind of fed up of the fact that he's been told that he's been ducking Triple G, which he was. He was ducking the guy for some time here. Not by choice. His promoters were doing a buildup. They were trying to get him prepared to get him to that position. But for fight fans, they don't want to hear all that. Fight fans are very selfish. We're all very selfish. We want the fight to happen today. We want it to happen yesterday, you know? So I like that Canelo isn't that he's a better personality in terms of being more of a jerk than Oscar De La Hoya was, because Oscar, it just didn't fit him. You know what I mean? It wasn't genuine. You could just really tell that he was forcing to be a jerk like even when he did it with Mayorga and he did it with Fernando Vargas, it just didn't come across like scary or, wow, this guy's ready to kick his ass. You know what I mean? It was just completely different.
Yeah, you know, and the funny, but the thing is that, you know, you could, like, same thing with Canelo, like, you could go back and look at his interviews throughout the years, and you're not going to hear anything new. He answers everything the same way. But, you know, the most interesting thing for me that was part of that whole post-fight was when Max Kellerman basically asked him that he would basically have to have the fight of his life to be able to beat Triple G. And you could kind of see what you mentioned just a couple of seconds ago, that he's kind of tired of them mentioning this guy to him and mentioning this fight and mentioning him that, you know, he's not the favorite in this fight, you know? So
right.
I thought that was kind of interesting, kind of his demeanor at that point when Kellerman asked him and made that comment in the post-fight interview. I don't know if you noticed that.
No, I did. You know, I mean, look, I don't think any fighter wants to be looked at as the underdog or the guy that's just supposed to be the sacrificial lamb to the guy that they're hoping is going to be the big star, you know? And I think Canelo feels a little sided, you know, where everybody, not just HBO, but I think the majority of the world right now is expecting Triple G to come out and do a blowout, you know, destroy Canelo Alvarez in the way that so many predicted that he was going to do with Danny Jacobs. But the only people that are, and what's, I, you know, you got to respect Canelo, man. I mean, I've been a very big critic of him. I think you have too. I think our circle of people that we talk to been very big critics of Canelo Alvarez. But the guy does improve, and I don't think this is going to be such an easy fight for Triple G as some are suggesting. The thing that was robbed by us on that Saturday night with Julio Cesar Chavez Felipe was we didn't get questions answered. One was how well would his chin hold up to a bigger puncher, a bigger guy? How well would he respond to pressure, somebody pushing him back? How well would he show he could keep a bigger guy off of him? We didn't get any of that answered. But I tell you what we did get answered on Saturday night. For two things for me. One is that Canelo can place his punches very well. He mixes it up pretty good from body to head. He's got a good radar of when to allow his punches to get let loose like missiles. But the second one is, I got to tell you this. I don't care what anybody says. He is not a puncher. There's really not a whole lot of power behind this guy's punches. He needs the right opponent in order for him to have a KO reel. He didn't have it with Julio Cesar Chavez. I just sat back and I honestly sat there and thought for 12 rounds, I was like, you know what? If this was David Lemieux or even Gennady Golovkin, and they were landing these hellacious shots the way Canelo was doing it, one of those commentators or somebody in the audience would have been saying, okay, this is enough. And the way they were saying it when Lemieux was putting hands on Reyes, everybody was like, okay, dude, we've seen enough. This guy could take a hit, and he's getting plummeted, you know. And when are we going to stop this? This is not worth it. We need to protect this guy's health. Where Canelo putting his hands and placing these perfect punches on Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., let me ask you, do you ever get that sense of, dude, we got to stop this fight before this kid gets brain damage? I didn't.
No, but it also has to do with Chavez, where we've seen him really take some punishment. The only punch is that counter right that he landed very, very well, Canelo did, and he kind of made Chavez take a couple steps back later in the fight. But other than that, I never saw Julio Cesar Chavez hurt. I never saw him hurt. So, I mean,
I just wonder this. Let me ask you this, okay? If the amount of punishment and the amount of shots that were landed on Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. by Canelo, if it was Triple G or David Lemieux, do you think they would have hurt Julio and stopped him? Or do you think it still would have been a 12-round outcome?
I think with Julio, it's kind of tough to tell because he can't take a punch. You know, they do say that Triple G hits as hard as, you know, a light heavyweight or a cruiserweight. And the only guy that we've seen knock out, you know, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. is, you know, Andres Bonfara, who is considered, you know, a light heavyweight. So I think it would be a little bit tough. I couldn't say that for sure. I think that Chavez Jr., you know, after everything, his best skill is having a chin. So, you know, I wouldn't be able to answer that right now that I would think that Golovkin, maybe the combination of Golovkin hitting him often, possibly more often than Canelo, since Triple G goes after a knockout much more aggressively than Canelo, and the power, then that combination I do see stopping Chavez Jr. at this point.
My friend Felipe is still blinded by the Julio Cesar Chavez thing. I understand. Let's move on.
Well, let's move on because obviously I answered your question the only way that I could, and you still don't understand what really is going on. I try to put it into terms you could understand. Okay, on the same weekend, the taping of HBO's Face Off was scheduled between Andre Ward and Sergey Kovalev with Max Kellerman as the MC. It was reported the HBO crew began their setup at 4:30 in the morning on Sunday, but Ward, who was in the house for Canelo Chavez Jr., decided to fly back home without rhyme or reason. The show would not be rescheduled, according to the network. So, David, do you think something happened? Do you think this is some kind of a mind game? Do you think that Andre Ward just doesn't care?
Mental warfare. Listen, look, and I know some folks are going to come at me about this, but let me tell you this. Sometimes, and you know, Ward is taking a script from Floyd Mayweather, which is becoming the hated in the game. Look at the amount, look at the reaction of what people, when they saw that Ward didn't show up that face-off with Max Kellerman on HBO, there was an outrage. And, you know, there's been some talks that there's not a major buzz or it's not going to generate pay-per-view numbers because the failing of the first fight, you know, well, not the failing, but, you know, it didn't make these extraordinary numbers that to make people believe that there's going to be a major gathering back to see a rematch, right? Ward, in some ways, Felipe, I think created a bigger interest of people wanting to tune in and see Sergey Kovalev knock this guy out for being very disrespectful to the sport, being disrespectful for the people that were hoping and wanting to see this face off. You know, Andre Ward, to me, not only is trying to get underneath the skin of Kovalev, but he's definitely getting underneath the skin of fans, which he's continued, and he's been doing for quite some time here. He is the villain right now. He is Money Mayweather. He's always said that he wanted to take over and be more like his idol, who's Floyd. He's adored Floyd. He's respected Floyd. And right now, he's doing just that.
I somewhat agree with you, but my question is this. You know, let's say it is a game, you know, mental
you
game.
You broke up. You broke up, Felipe. What did you say?
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, let's say that it is, I somewhat agree with you, but not all the way. Let's say it is mental warfare that he's doing here with Sergey Kovalev. But why?
I don't think it's mental warfare with Sergey. Anyway, I honestly don't think that it is. That's what it is. What I said was, I think it's his way of getting people to tune in. You know, is hey, I'm gonna do my own promotional. You know what I mean?
But why? But why bite the hand that feeds you in HBO, and why leave them hanging in such a way with HBO? Why do that?
Because he's not that smart. He's not that smart. I mean, look. Look,
I don't think so. I don't think he's that. He's a very smart man.
He's not that smart when it comes to managing his career, Felipe. Let's be honest. He's not that smart when it comes to managing his career. You know, he should have been a lot further in terms of being a gold medalist. They didn't capitalize on that. They had a way for a tournament to get his name out there. And still, he's not a household name. This guy, you know, and he's actually has shot himself in the foot, not just once, but numerous times. So he's kind of proved that he thinks he knows what he's doing, but really doesn't, you know, doesn't. You know, he should just be a fighter, but he's trying to have all the titles, and it just doesn't work. So, yeah, he bit the hand that feeds him, which is HBO. He literally ticked them off. But I think that all can change if the numbers and the money's right. If the people do tune in, because everybody loves to hate the villain, it's going to pay off better for both parties. All parties that are involved in this mega fight between them, this mega rematch between the two. Excuse me.
Jesus.
Burping, but
get some.
Yeah.
Let's have your wife burp you real quick. I'll take over for 5 minutes. like a baby.
Like a baby, dog. Okay. So let's go. Keep going.
On this subject, or you want to move on?
Oh, we can move. I think we covered this subject already.
Okay, let's
move
on. Let's look towards the future now. We looked into the past. We looked for the last week. Let's look towards the past. You want to give out the number real quick, David, see if we could get some calls? Let's get some opinions out
there. Yeah. You guys want to call right now, 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring with myself, Dave Duenas, and Felipe the Jinx.
This Saturday night from the Mecca of Boxing, Madison Square Garden.
Remember this, people. Just remember this really quick. Right now, we're going to get into what's going to be happening this Saturday between Felix Diaz and Terrence Crawford, okay? So whoever Felipe picks, pick the opposite.
Okay, yeah.
But be careful. Friday.
Peter Petrov.
Because Friday he could change his pick and he'll just screw everybody. So do not bet off of what Felipe says. Just giving you a heads up and a warning. Go ahead, Felipe. Let's continue this rundown.
Okay. We're ready? Okay. This Saturday night from the Mecca of Boxing, Madison Square Garden in the Big Apple, New York City, the unified WBC, WBO super lightweight champion Terrence Crawford will defend both his titles against Felix Diaz live on HBO on the undercard in the title eliminator Rey Beltran. Will face the hard-hitting Jonathan Maicelo of Peru. So we have the return of Terrence Crawford.
Right.
Our good friend, our colleague Gabriel Montoya mentioned this camp life that Top Rank put together for the YouTube channel to promote the fight. It's about 7-8 minutes, and it's a four-parter. I watched the first part. Thank you to Gabriel for let me know. I looked for it on HBO Boxing, and I looked for it in different spots, and I finally he directed me in the right direction. And I'm trying to figure. I know that Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya, they've mentioned it on the next round that Terrence Crawford is very surly, that his demeanor is not all that great, that he's not too charismatic, that he doesn't have a great personality.
He's not.
I don't get it. I don't see it. I mean, the guy is not. You know. he's not Carlos Cuadras, you know, he's not this out there kind of guy that's, you know, laughing and very affable and very friendly, but he just seems like kind of like a little bit of a reserved guy, you know, he likes to keep to his own and with his family. I just don't see the other way of saying that. I mean, I haven't been there when Steve Kimham has mentioned that he goes to certain members of the press and says, I'm not going to talk to you, and I'm not going to talk to you, and I'm not going to talk to you, which is clearly not the way to promote your career. But as far as, like, in front of the camera or anything like that, I don't see it all that much. I mean, maybe it's just me. I just think he's a little bit reserved and kind of likes to keep to his own and to his family.
You know, I mean, we had a chance here on Leaving Ring to interview him, and this is when he was on the come up. And he was doing beta testing, and he came on the show, and it was not the greatest interaction with him because he is a very very quiet guy, just like you just mentioned right now. You know, in the old school terms, he does exactly what I was talking about in terms of our grandfathers and uncles, that this fighter fights with his hands. I think what's rubbed off a lot of people is the way Top Rank has kind of pushed him along as a good old all-American boy when he really isn't. You know, there are some very dark, you know, some demons that he's dealing with, but that's boxing. That's like part of the deal. I mean, these guys, you know, guys that get into the sport, most guys that get into the sport are coming from a very dark, dark place that are fighting their way to get out of there. You know, there's a story behind a lot of fighters, you know. So with Terrence Crawford, yeah, not wanting to accept whatever interviews with media, that's on him. I could care less about that. You don't want to talk to me? That's fine with me. I don't have a problem with that. You're not the first fighter. You're not going to be the last fighter that doesn't want to speak to me. I'm cool with that. But what I do want to talk about is what's going to happen this Saturday between Crawford and Diaz. That's what I really want to talk about. You have two guys here. One guy is obviously an Olympian. One guy's a lot shorter. Another guy by the name of Crawford has been definitely showing that he's a really tough guy to figure out, and the puzzle hasn't been solved. Nobody seems to have been able to really solve him because he can switch and hit. You know, he has great ring generalship. He's very intelligent in there. He knows how to use his jab. He knows how to put his combination. The one thing that is very extraordinary is that he can be on cruise control, but in a split second, he can light up the whole ring. So there is something very special about Crawford. Does his personality, when it comes to doing interviews, does it come across? Absolutely not. But I think what matters the most to me and most fans out there in the world is, does his personality explode and shine in the ring where it's supposed to? Yes, it does.
Of course, you know, and I don't think that even though Felix Diaz is a good fighter, he's a very good fighter, but I don't think this is the guy that's going to beat Terrence Crawford. You know, I think that, you know, he has not seen a fighter like Terrence Crawford. He came close, you know, in Lamont Peterson, and he lost the majority decision. Now, a lot of people saw him win that fight, but at the end of the day, he does have that loss on his record. But even so,
Lamont Peterson is not a good – yeah, I mean, Lamont Peterson is just such a different fighter than Crawford. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know?
So even so, even if you did beat Lamont Peterson – where I was going before you interrupted me, even if you did beat Lamont Peterson, that doesn't necessarily mean you have the skills to beat a Terrence Crawford. I think Terrence Crawford is one of the best fighters out there. I don't think that he's had that one signature fight. It's not Felix Diaz. His one signature fight is probably going to be one of the welterweights that are out there right now, or Manny Pacquiao. You know, I don't think that he's going to get that signature fight in the super lightweight division at 140 pounds. So I think this is just Top Rank's way of putting him with good fighters, with good records, that are going to put up somewhat of a fight, but that we all know, honestly, that Terrence Crawford is going to come out victorious this Saturday night at the Madison Square Garden. And it just puts another brick on that road to bigger and better names for Terrence Crawford.
I'm not going to say that, you know, he's going to come out victorious. This is a fight game. Anything can happen. Terrence Crawford could possibly have not trained, you know, or not take a Felix Diaz serious. I mean, look, there's a height difference here, okay? And by the names that are mentioned, now, Lamont Peterson is a completely different fighter. Lamont Peterson is a volume puncher. He's a guy that you can actually trade with him. Crawford can be very elusive. Crawford can make you do things that you didn't think you were going to do in terms of making a minor mistake become into a big mistake. Crawford is a different breed. But at the same time, Diaz's resume does stand up for itself, and it does show that this guy brings something. He does bring something to the table. You don't become an Olympian. You don't go with other like Lamont Peterson tooth and nail with a guy like that and not be blown out. We've seen guys get in with Lamont Peterson, and he's really turned things around and made those guys seem like they shouldn't have been in the same ring that night with him. So I got to give Felix Diaz something there that most folks are probably not giving. But I agree with you. There's a lot of hurdles to jump to beat a Crawford. Diaz is going to have to be out of character. To me, he can't really box a Crawford. To me, he's got to go over there and almost do – remember when I mentioned about fighting like Lomachenko? You don't fight them with their rhythm. You try to break their rhythm. And Felix Diaz has got to do that with Terrence Crawford, I know some folks are going to mention Gamboa, that gave Crawford some problems. Gamboa gave Crawford some problems, even though, the stature of height, of Gamboa was small. So Diaz should have some success with that. But, again, different fighters. Gamboa throws some very orthodox punches from different angles, from weird angles. And he does have some speed. Felix Diaz, to me, is more of a traditional boxer, classic boxer. And when you're like that, and when you try to box another boxer, to me, sometimes you're kind of falling into Crawford's lead. And as a fighter, you don't want to do that. You want to break the other guy's rhythm. You want to take away what he does best. And what Crawford does best is box. So why would you try to do that? Why would you try to implicate that, Felipe?
I don't understand the logic of trying to have a guy like Felix Diaz change his style to beat Terrence Crawford. I mean, obviously it's not a good idea for him to box, but if that's what he is, and obviously he's a boxer being an Olympian and a medalist at that, that's what he's going to try to do. And he's going in there thinking that even though we've seen Terrence Crawford box, Jurokis Gamboa's ears off and Ray Beltran's ears off and all this and all these other guys, Thomas Delorme and Henry Lundy and Victor Postol and John Molina, that he's going in there as a better boxer. And that's what he's going to try to do. He's not going to try to go in there and maul him or pressure him or anything like that. He's going in there thinking that he's a better boxer, that his jab is quicker, that his right hand's going to get there faster, and that's what he's going to try to do. I don't see the point of even bringing up that he needs to do something different.
Well, I'm going to tell you why he has to bring something different. If you're training him and you are being realistic, you got to sit back and go, okay, Diaz, who have you fought that comes into the same pedigree of Crawford? Who has Crawford fought? Okay, Crawford has made good boxers as Postol look like he can't box worth the crap. He made Postol seem out of rhythm. So why would you think you're going to be as good as Postol, who had the height, who had the reach as well, when you're shorter arms, and you're going to probably have to get in there? He's got to get in that pocket. So in order to get in that pocket, you can't box a taller guy who's going to be moving on you. So why would you even decide or even think of boxing a taller fighter? That makes no sense there. So he has to do something that is not to that he's normally not normally wouldn't do with another previous opponent. He's got to step out of that box a bit, and it also would throw off Crawford. It would make Crawford, because Crawford's going to believe, hey, I'm fighting a boxer, he's going to probably try to box me, and I'm going to be fine with that. I'll be okay with that. Show Crawford something different. Show Crawford something that's unexpected. And that's what we've seen some of the greats do and from time to time. It shows something different. Show something that other guys not going to expect.
Well, I don't think it's the first time that Felix Diaz at 5'5 is fighting a taller fighter. I mean, obviously he did it against Lamont Peterson. The thing here is not so much about,
Again, Lamont Peterson is not Terrence Crawford, though.
Yeah,
you can fight
Lamont Peterson
with your style.
He's a taller fighter, though. He's a taller fighter. The thing here is
he's a taller fighter, but he crouches. He bends a lot at the knees. You know, Lamont Peterson likes to stay flat-footed. He bends the knees. He likes to throw wide hooks. So you can box Lamont Peterson. You can trade with Lamont Peterson in Felix Diaz's style. Terrence Crawford, he doesn't do any of that. So
I don't
that
think
makes
it's
no
so
sense
much,
to try to do.
I don't think it's so much the fact that Terrence Crawford is taller than Felix Diaz, because Felix Diaz needs to get in there on the inside. I think it's the fact that how are you gonna, you know, stop Crawford from doing all the things that he does? Because if you by any way beat Terrence Crawford,
cut the ring off,
or
cut
as
the
an
ring
orthodox,
off, get it,
as
get,
an orthodox,
get in the inside.
Yeah, as an orthodox, well, guess what? He's gonna switch it up and fight you as a southpaw, and now you're gonna have to figure out how I'm gonna beat this guy as a southpaw. Because we've seen him do it before, that when things don't go his way when he's fighting orthodox, he switches over to southpaw. And even when things are going his way as an orthodox, he still likes to switch over as southpaw, and he does it very, very well. So not only do you have to worry about getting on the inside, but now you have to worry about which guard you're going to have to fight him at, and how many times you're going to be switching throughout the fight. So I think the fact that Terrence Crawford is three inches taller than him and has an advantage in reach in, you know, 8 centimeters, which I don't know what that, what is that, 67 inches to 70, so 3 inches. I think that's not his only worry. He has more worries and possibly bigger worries.
Oh, he's got everything to worry about. No, I agree. That's what I'm saying. He's got everything to worry about Crawford. You know, Crawford is a guy that he's never seen and has never been. You know, you can't prepare for a Terrence Crawford by some of the mentions that you just said right now. That's why if you're going to go in there and you think you're going to box a Terrence Crawford without believing that, you got to push him back. You got to cut the ring off. You do have to work in the inside more than often that you would have facing a Lamont Peterson. You know, you're going to have to try to do things that you normally wouldn't do with the Terrence Crawford to interrupt his rhythm. Because once he gets in that rhythm, like you mentioned, he goes southpaw. He goes southpaw whether he's in danger. He goes southpaw whether he sees something. And he says, hey, I'm more comfortable doing this. Once he gets in that rhythm, it's the end of the night. Because Crawford could cruise. If once he gets into that, hey, I got this in the bag, you can see he cruises and he starts having fun. When you see Crawford start having fun in that ring, you're in major, major trouble. So that's something that Diaz camp, they need to keep an eye out for, really look at, is once they see Crawford start to have a little too much fun, they have to step up the game and change from A to B or whatever the plan they're going to bring to the table. But more likely, most fighters nowadays in most camps, they don't have a bag of different tricks. They only, you know, we've seen more and more fighters become trick ponies, one trick ponies than anything else.
I think that you're giving Diaz too much credit. I think that this is more of a stay busy fight for Bud Crawford. I think it's a fight that puts
How am
him
I giving him credit? I'm telling you what he needs to do to win. I didn't say he's going to win. I don't think he's going to win. I think he's going to do exactly what you're saying. He's going to try to box the more superior boxer, which is, to me, it's the dumbest thing you could do.
Then why even bother to give your cheap impersonation of Teddy Atlas and tell us what Felix Diaz needs to win? You know, just take the fight for what it is. It's a stay busy fight for Terrence Crawford to see what opens up maybe in the welterweight division and move on. And let's talk about Ray Beltran and Jonathan Mycelo, which I think it's a real fight. And it's a
because there's a strong possibility, Felipe, that his camp did pay attention and his camp said, hey, this is what we need to do. Great fighters figure things out. But unfortunately, you've only started watching boxing, a year ago when Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. started policing that place.
Okay.
Let's move on.
Felix,
you don't know shit for boxing.
So Felix Diaz has proven to you that he's a great fighter and that he's going to be able to put it
off. No, he hasn't.
By beating,
he has
by
to
beating
do it this Saturday,
Sammy Vasquez,
he's
by beating Sammy Vasquez
People,
and beating
listen,
Levi Morales
listen.
In his last fight.
Listen,
right?
The voice of reason, the voice of reason is about to speak right now. Remember, folks.
What?
If Felipe is picking Crawford, there's a strong possibility.
Your wife is coming
on the strong possibility he's going to lose now. Let's move on. Let's go down to the rundown.
Yeah, let's move on because you're looking ridiculous right now. Let's talk about Ray Beltran and Jonathan Mycelo, which is the same main event of that fight card. I mean, I think that's a much more competitive fight than the main event. You know, here we have a Ray Beltran who's had some troubles. You know, he had to step away from what many people
thought. He's resurged his career.
Yeah, he had a sparring mentality. He had been a sparring partner for Manny Pacquiao for a long time. So he had to get rid of that mentality at, you know, he's 35 years old. And he's lost to Terrence Crawford. He didn't look all that great against Terrence Crawford. He had a no contest, no decision against Jairo Ao. He beat Ivan Nájera in two rounds, which is what you're supposed to do when you're at his level. If you're an elite fighter, if you're a Class A fighter, you're supposed to take an Ivan Nájera and knock him out in two rounds. And then he stopped Miguel Angel Mendoza in five rounds, and then he stopped Mason Menard in a late sub. That fight got done really quickly. His last one, December 10th, 2016.
Right.
That's what you're supposed to do when you're facing these type of guys. You know, guys that really are not at that A level, they're not at the elite level, and you consider one of those fighters, which Ray Beltran does, then you take care of these guys ASAP, which he did. But now he's facing a Johnson Maicelo who, you know, he's not, for me, which I've seen him fight, he has a lot of power. He's 33 years old. He's kind of like he's going to show us in this fight if he's elite or not. If he beats Ray Beltran, obviously he's going to show us that he's an elite. He looked very, very good in his last fight, going to the unanimous decision against Jose Felix Jr., who was a prospect, dropping him mm-hmm. like five times. You know, so he has power, and I think that's going to be a factor here. We're going to see how well Beltran takes a punch.
Right, we talked about that fight, and we compared Marcelo to Lucas Matisse, like a, you know, that type of style. You know, there's some power, the way he throws punches. It's really hard to predict. Beltran to me is a guy that has gotten better. But let me ask you this. Do you think we're jumping the gun too much about Beltran and believing that he's gotten better? I mean, he was sitting on his punches a little bit more. He's a strong, durable guy. Yeah, he's had the sparring mentality for a long time. He's kind of shown that he could shake that off. But are we giving him are we drinking the Kool-Aid when it comes to him or what? What do you think?
I think there's fighters that get to a certain point in their careers and get their second win, you know. And I think he's at this he's at this point. He's getting that second win, you know. You know, obviously we all know it's not easy to beat a Terrence Crawford. But every time that he's lost, now the fight that's kind of hard to believe that he actually lost because it was that Luis Ramos fight back in 2012, you know. And then mm-hmm. he lost to Sharif Borghery, which a lot of people thought it was very, very close. But every time that he's lost, he's kind of coming back and beating some good fighters. I mean, he's beating Henry Lundy. He's beating the guys that he's supposed to beat for us to say this guy is more than a B-level fighter or an opponent or a sparring partner. You know,
right.
He's beating those guys. You know, these guys maybe try to see him as a gatekeeper like Henry Lundy or Arash Usmani. And then he beats them, and he says, "Hey man, I'm not a gatekeeper." So he's proven. So I think he's getting his second win here. Maicelo, despite being 33 years old, though, he has not been in the wars in the amount of fights that Beltran has had. And then obviously he has not had that grind in the gym at the wild card, being the chief sparring partner for Pacquiao for years and years and years, which has to take something out of you. Getting in the ring with Manny Pacquiao maybe two or three times a week for four or five rounds at a time. I mean, that can't be easy on a fighter. So even though Maicelo is 33 and Beltran is 35, you know, I think that Maicelo is the fresher of the two, which also might be a factor in this fight. What do you think?
I think so, too. I mean, look, I think that right now, at the point of their career, they're perfect for each other to be facing. One guy is actually like the Mexican Mickey Ward. You know, when you think he's done and he's over with, he has one final show to show, hey, I'm still here. I'm still a force to be reckoned with in Beltran. Marcelo's not a young chicken. You know, he's like you said, he's 33, but he's more preserved. You know, this is a big stage for Marcelo, you know. So I think this is the perfect time to see where both guys go. You know, Beltran could get possibly, I don't know if he can get, do you think, I don't know. Because he's a tough guy. He's a tough, you know, nut to crack. This is going to be a really major assignment for Jonathan to try to get Rey Beltran out there. I mean, should his mindset set be, let me throw a lot of power punches, or let me try to box him and soften him up before I try to go for the kill? I don't know. What do you think? What do you think?
That guy has to be who he has been for this whole time, which is a power puncher, a guy that's going to go out there and try to knock Beltran's head off. That's what he has to be in this fight. You know,
I don't think he can do it.
Well, I mean, that's what we're going to see Saturday night, and we're going to have we're going to see, because, you know, even though he sent Felix down five times, you know,
he's no Ray, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he's no, but all he needs is that one punch. He needs that one punch. And,
that's,
you know,
true.
Beltran has been knocked out before. He has seven losses. Two of those have been by knockout very early in
by
his
who?
Career.
Refresh my memory. I'm trying to remember. Who's knocked out Rey Beltran?
Well, the first one by a gentleman by the name of Steve Trumbull back in 2001. So
that's when he was in his inspiring mind frame, though, still.
Yeah. And then the second time was against Amés Díaz back in 2008. So it's been a long time. It's been almost 10 years since he's been stopped.
Yeah.
You know,
if Jonathan Marcelo can knock out Rey Beltran, that tells you how much of a major power puncher player he is.
Yeah, yes,
if he can
I
do that.
So. No,
you
I
know what I mean?
I think that if Marcelo knocks out Rey Beltran on the semi-main event this Saturday night on HBO, I think that we have a new player to the tune of Marcos Maidana. You know, when Marcos Maidana stopped Josecito, was it Josecito or Victor Ortiz first? When he kind of
Victor Ortiz
the,
first.
Yeah,
it was
when
Victor
he jumped
Ortiz
on the on the radar. You know, I think we have that type of player where maybe he's not the greatest fighter out there, but he's good enough to beat a Raymond Beltran, and he's good enough to give us good, entertaining fights. And then we're gonna see how far he can go with it. Now, the funny thing is that, you know, as well as some of our listeners, I also co-host a podcast in Spanish called Boxeo Tijuana every Tuesday night. And on that show, we have a lot of callers reach us throughout Latin America. And the fact that on our same network, Boxeo Tijuana, on another show, a gentleman on that show, he's from Peru, where Marcelo's from. We got a lot of guys from Peru calling. And now, Peru doesn't have a lot of boxing. There's hardly any boxing in the country, and they don't have a lot of boxers. There used to be a guy, I think his last name was Rosiel, who was like a junior flyweight. And then there was Kina Malpartida, who was a kind of a big name in female boxing. But other than that, lately there hasn't been a lot of name fighters. And Marcelo is the name fighter. He is that one boxer that the Peruvian boxing fans are hanging their hat on, per se, you know? So
he's, in other words, he's the Frites for Brazil. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Good example. So for him to pull it off, he's going to give us some good fights. I think he's going to make a little bit of a run. He's a little bit older. He's 33 years old. He has a good amount of fights.
I like the kid.
I like him, too. I like his style. I like the way he fights. I like that he's aggressive. But he does have a huge task on his hands. And honestly, I mean, now you're making me feel like I'm a jinx, because I don't even want to say who I think is going to win, because I don't want to jinx.
Well, let me tell you this. I mean, Rey Beltran has a chance to knock out this kid, too, because, as we mentioned, he's not the most graceful guy in the ring. He does throw some very heavy shots, and when you do have a heavy puncher like Marcelo that doesn't have great footwork, he does fall in head first. He does – his balance can go off a little bit. And Rey Beltran, what he's learned from the wild card and what he's learned from being the sparring partner for Manny Pacquiao and many others, and having the chance to face many of the fighters of the world, is he does know how to preserve himself in that ring. He knows how to take his time, and he knows where to place the punches correctly to slow you down and possibly knock you out. This is a good fight.
Yes, I think that he's composed enough to kind of see past the whole power punching show of Marcelo and being able to pick him off with more solid boxing.
You won't, you know, and here's the thing is that some folks will probably think because of, what was it, Jose Felix Jr., right, who he, Marcelo had fought prior to this fight being announced, is that Felix was the boxer and did box him fairly well. I mean, that I think me and you talked about this, and, you know, that Felix Jr. did everything right in that fight, but Marcelo's power and his awkwardness, of where he throws his punches was the thing that was hard to time and hard to see. And that's what dropped Jose Felix Jr. a few times. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Ray responds, Beltran responds to Marcelo's awkwardness and his power. And like I said, if Marcelo can show that he is a murderous puncher, we got a lot to talk about because he just made things just that more interesting, especially stopping a veteran and still a player in the division. So some good things right here with this fight.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a very good fight. And that's one of the fights that I'm looking forward to this weekend. The other fight that I'm looking forward to, which is I didn't put on the rundown, but I don't know if you want to kind of like just touch on it a little bit, is going to be on Saturday night on Fox Sports 1, where David Benavidez, the undefeated 168 fighter out of Phoenix, is going to have a pretty good test in Porky Medina on Saturday night, and it's an eliminator. So I think that's the other very, very good competitive fight of the weekend.
Let me ask you, what do you got right there? I mean, I honestly like Porky Medina's chances in this a lot.
I like
Benavidez. Don't get me wrong. I like what I see from Benavidez, but it's just not enough for me to make a complete judgment on him on where he should, what's the next step for him. To me, this is the big test. And it's the test of I'm not quite sure yet. Is Benavidez, is he ready for a Porky Medina? I don't know. You know what I mean?
20 years old looks very good. He's been in some good names, guys with good records, but he hasn't been a guy with quite the name of Rogelio Porky Medina. Not that saying that Rogelio Porky Medina is a big, big name in the super middleweight division, but at only 28 years old, he has 44 fights as a pro, which is more than Ray Beltran. Ray Beltran has 41 at 35 years old. This kid started fighting very, very early in his life. He's been a pro since 2007. He's actually from my parents' hometown, San Luis Rio Colorado, Sonora, but now makes his home in Hermosillo. And, you know, this guy, he's gotten in there. He has a loss against none other than the 168-pound WBO champion, Gilberto Ramirez. Back in 2010, he also suffered a loss against Luis Ramon Campos. I didn't really see that coming. I thought Porky Medina had that fight. And then he also lost to Jose Uzcategui, who's also fighting this Saturday night. He lost to Marco Reyes, who, you know, went all 10 rounds with David Lemieux. He lost to Baru Jack, and he lost to Jonathan Gonzalez. So every guy that he's ever lost to has been and James DeGale, actually, as well. But he's lost the names, you know. He's lost the name, and his best win to date is none other than Jaylon Love. So I think experience-wise, I think that Porky
it's
Medina
on Porky's favor. Yeah.
Has been here before. You know,
right.
He's been in the ring. He's 8 years older than David Benavidez. Benavidez is only 20 years old. So I'm gonna lean towards Porky Medina, but I think Benavidez has a really good chance in this fight. I think it's pretty much of a 50-50 fight, with me leaning slightly towards Porky Medina.
I'm leaning towards that way too. David Benavidez, you know, there are some good names there, but he's made such quick work that we don't know how good he is. He's been in with some great names in sparring, you know, from Kelly Pavlik to other guys. And they've all had said the same. The kid has some real talent, you know, and you could see it. You could see with David Benavidez that there is real talent with him. And he does have the size. And he seems to show that he does have power in his punches. Porky Medina, we're going to find out. Does he carry the power? But where I'm more interested is once the experience kicks in from Porky – is David Benavidez being 20 years old, is he mature enough to adjust to what Porky's going to do to him? That's going to be the telling for me. I'm going to go with David Benavidez, man. I just think because of size and the youth, I'm going to go with him. You know, Felipe the Jinx. Sorry.
You just jinxed David Benavidez, Mr. Petrov.
Hey, let me ask you this. If David Benavidez blows him out, makes quick work of Porky Medina, where do we put this kid at? What do we say about this kid now? You know, because obviously he's not answering.
Well,
he's a player.
He's obviously a player in the division, and he's right up there. But I mean, at 20 years old, beating the Porky Medina, are you ready for the champs at 168? I mean, is that your next step? Because I think this.
I don't think so.
I think this fight's it's an eliminator. So now you're ready for Gilberto Ramirez?
It's a double-edged sword. If you lose to a Porky Medina, it's, well, you know what? The experience wasn't there. You still have time. You're 20 years old. But if you beat a Porky Medina, it's, well, what's next? Where do you go from there?
The division is not that deep. Let me go over the champions at super middleweight. The WBC is vacant because Badu Jack left it vacant because now he's going to go up to light heavyweight. At WBA, we have Tyrone Zewiegi. Then at the IBF, we have James DeGale, but he has a broken jaw. So Jose Uzcategui and Andrade Terrero are going to be fighting this weekend for the interim IBF title. And then obviously in the WBO, we have Mr. Gilberto El Zurdo Ramirez. So is he ready for Ramirez? Quite possibly not. Is he ready for an Uzcategui or an Andrade Terrero? Maybe. Is he ready for a Tyrone Zewiegi? Maybe. So, or is he ready for one of the other names in the WBC, in the WBC rankings? Now, one guy that looked pretty good that I think would be a good fight, and I think David Benavidez might even beat him, is this guy from Turkey. His name is Avni Yildirim. It's really hard. I mean, I'm trying it. Now, imagine if you tried it. Avni Yildirim. He fought over the weekend in Jalisco, in Zapopan, Jalisco, on Televisa, and he beat Marco Antonio Peribán, and I believe he won the international title or something like that. He looked pretty good, strong, aggressive. I'm not sure if you got a chance to watch that fight. So I think that against Benavidez, I think Benavidez has a good chance of beating that guy because even though he was strong and he sent Peribán to the canvas in the 11th round, I didn't see all that much that Benavidez wouldn't be able to handle at one point from Turkish dude, Yildirim. So,
I think
in the future.
Yeah. Well, we won't know really to think of where he goes until we see his performance. We got to wait. And I think then we can start judging whether or not what direction he's going to go. So, let's move on.
Let's go to the next across the street. Also on Saturday night, but on Showtime, Gervonta Davis will defend his newly minted IBF 130-pound title against Liam Walsh in the UK, while Gary Russell Jr. will face Oscar Escandon in Maryland later that evening, also on Showtime, defending his WBC featherweight title. In that semi-main event, Andre Darrell will face Venezuela's Jose Uzcategui for the interim IBF super middleweight title. What's up with Gervonta Davis having to go all the way to the UK to defend his title? What's up with that?
I think maybe money. Maybe there was more money, you know? I don't know.
Isn't he promoted by none other than Floyd Mayweather Jr., who said he's going to take care of his fighters?
I know. But you know what? I honestly respect that he's going to travel out. It shows that he wants to stay active because he rightfully so, he could have opted and said, I'm not going to the UK. He needs to come over here. But I think the kid is building his brand. So I like that. Whereas Floyd Mayweather would never do something like that. A lot of the fighters actually wouldn't do that. You know what I mean? They would opt to stay back where they're comfortable with. Gervonta Davis said, nah, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to tank it. So I like it.
Now, do you think that Gary Russell has a fight in his hands against Oscar Escandon, or do you think it's pretty much a gimme for Russell?
You know what? Like we mentioned with Beltran and Marcelo, is the timing is right. With these two guys, the timing is right. You know, Gary Russell is a fast hand, good boxer. But he's not active. He hasn't been active. Oscar, same thing. Escalón, same thing. Hasn't been very active. Actually, the fight that was originally scheduled, in March? Last March. In March, but it was canceled, I believe, right? And it was canceled due to a back injury. So, for me, this is the perfect time to see where both these guys are at, because one or the other is going to show some ring rust, and one isn't. So it's a good fight in terms that, to me, they're both in equal playing grounds right now. I don't know what you think.
I don't know, man. This Gary Russell, is he hot? Is he cold? Is he fighting? Is he not fighting? You know, I agree with you. Maybe Escandón is not the guy, but he might – you know, he might give him something to think about, you know, because Gary Russell is not a guy that, like you say, has not fought often either. I mean, you know, you're right about Escandón. He has not fought since March of 2016 when he defeated Robinson Castellanos, who just beat Yorkis Gamboa last week. He stopped Castellanos by KO. Castellanos will now be fighting. They just said it today. Oh, he's going to be fighting Jezreel Corrales at 130 pounds in I think the fight's in July. They just announced that forum fight, Miguel Berset against Takashi Miura, Sullivan Barrera against Joe Smith Jr., and then Jezreel Corrales, who just got signed to Golden Boy, facing Robinson Castellanos. Whereas Gary Russell has not seen action since April, a month later, 2016. So both of them you should expect to be somewhat rusty, right?
I'm expecting that, you know, I mean, you know, I think the more pressure is for Gary Russell, obviously, right, in Maryland. Oscar's just got to go out there and perform, just be him, right? I mean, that's what should be expected. My concern is about the back injury, how I actually had reached out to the Guerreros. And I didn't follow up with the father, but, you know, I did ask the son, who helps trains Oscar. And, you know, he said, hey, talk to my dad about it and stuff. But so I didn't get a chance to get that answer because, like I said, I didn't follow up. This was, you know, when it had been announced, it was canceled and stuff. So I still don't know what type of injury is it going to be. Was it minor? Was it something that is going to prevent him to move? Because for a puncher, you need to be able to turn your waist, you know, to get the full effect of your power. So that's the big interest there. You know, with Gary Russell, like you said, hot, cold. You just don't know what you get with Gary Russell. You don't know if you're going to crap out with the kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. So we're going to have to see how Gary Russell shows up on Saturday night at the MGM National Harbor in Oxon Hill, Maryland. I don't know, man. I kind of want to go with Escandón just because I think that he's going to be a little bit hungrier, and I think that he might have enough pressure to go after Russell. But Russell, you know, he's a great boxer. He's very quick. He has great hands, great technique. It might be just one of those fights where he runs away with the decision and it wins 10 rounds out of the 12.
You know, I'm playing this fight in my head. Gary Russell is the, on paper and visually, he's the guy that should be able to outwork Oscar, right? The one thing that Gary Russell, though, has never possessed is power. And if Escalon's back is not injured and he's in 100% in shape, he should be able to at least muscle his way through some of the, fast pity-pat punches that Gary Russell Jr. likes to throw. So, like I said, the timing is perfect for both of them. I expect Gary Russell to come out and be pretty much dominant in the early rounds. It just leaves me on the table of wondering, does Escalón finally just, you know, pick it up? Does he catch his rhythm? Does he feel like I can't be hurt by this guy? And he starts to apply the pressure because he is a pressure fighter. You know, he's a guy that needs to get in there and try to land his big shot. So it's an interesting fight. The people that are not interested in the fight are the ones that are saying, well, who's this Escalón guy? I've never even heard of him. that's what's throwing up in the air, because the more recognizable name is Gary Russell Jr. And it's in Maryland. Like I said, it is in Maryland. So, you know.
Now, in the semi-main event, I think it's a pretty good fight between Andre Terrell and Jose Uzcategui. Uzcategui from Venezuela, actually lives here in Tijuana, has been fighting here his whole career. You know, he lost in his first big step-up fight, his first chance on HBO back in 2014. He lost the unanimous decision to Matt Korobov in a fight that he basically did a version of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. this last week, and not so bad. He did throw punches, but in the second half of the fight, he kind of got shut down. But since then, you know, he's been in some really not some big names. I mean, he beat a journeyman in his fight after that. And then his claim to fame is his second round knockout of Julius Jackson back in 2015. He's been riding the wave of that. After that, he beat Derek Finley and Fabiano Pena here in Mexico. So is he ready for an Andre Terrell? Did he show enough in two rounds against Julius Jackson that is going to show us that he's ready to defeat Andre Terrell this Saturday night? I don't know, man. I mean, I believe in Uzcategui. I think he's a good fighter. But Andre Terrell, I think he's a different type of fighter. Yeah, I think he's a different type of fighter. No, this guy's a resurrected. This is the other Terrell. This is a resurrected. You know? So, on this one, I'm probably going to go with Terrell.
Really? I don't know. God. You know, either one of the Durrells, they got talent. You know? I'm going to go with Terrell, too. I don't see. Yeah, I mean, no matter how rugged you are, if you don't bring power, you know, if you don't have that turnaround punch, you're more likely going to be outboxed by the Terrell. So, yeah, I'm with you on that one.
Well, Uzcategui, I mean, he has somewhat power. I mean, he has 26 wins, 22 by knockout, but it really hasn't been anybody. The only guy that had a name that he stopped was Julius Jackson, and he did it so quickly in the second round. I mean, he looked great. He sent him to the canvas three times. Four times, actually. Three times in the first round and once in the second. But other than that, I mean, there's really no other name on his ledger that we can say that he's ready for this kind of fight. I mean, the other name he lost to, which was Matt Korobov, and since then, Matt Korobov has done absolutely nothing.
Nothing, I was going to say. Nothing, yeah.
He's done since that fight. So we'll see. We'll see. But I think it's going to be for competitive, quite positive for the first half. And then I think Andre Terrell is going to take over from there. So moving on to the last note here on the rundown. Lastly, although it was revealed, Miguel Cotto will be facing Yoshihiro Kamegai in June, and then it was pushed back to early July. Now it was announced by our colleague Steve Kim and Mario Lopez that the fight is not only off, but Cotto is not at the wildcard gym in Los Angeles, but back in Puerto Rico, and that he was dropped from Roc Nation. My question here is, does anybody care?
No. Nobody cares. I don't care. I think he just needs to announce he's retired. You know, I mean, look, the Kamegai fight would have been great. We would have loved to have seen it. But, you know, just forget it. Forget it. I think he just needs to hang him up or that's about it. I don't know. Do you care? I don't care.
I haven't cared in months.
I want him to leave the HBO dates for somebody important, for fights that really do matter. You know, we're done with these divas.
HBO dates, you know. The HBO dates have been very scarce in 2017. I mean, we could probably name them off the top of our heads right now, the HBO dates that have been open HBO, not pay-per-view, you know. So I agree with you. Let's leave those dates for fighters that matter and for fights that matter. Because Miguel Cotto, after not fighting since November of 2015 and beating Yoshihiro Kamegai, then what? What? We're going to say that he's ready for who? You know?
Exactly.
What does it matter? What does it matter? So I don't see the point. He mentioned, you know, at the end of last year, beginning of this year, that 2017 was definitely the last year for Miguel Cotto inside of a ring as a fighter. He said that if at that time it was being talked about a Saúl Canelo Álvarez rematch, and if he said that if Saúl Canelo Álvarez wanted that rematch, that they had until December 31st of 2017 to put it together. Well, now we've seen that Saúl Canelo Álvarez has completely moved on from Miguel Cotto. He is completely in the rearview mirror for Saúl Canelo Álvarez. Obviously, Canelo Álvarez facing Triple G in September. Let's say Canelo Álvarez Triple G. Is the next logical fight for him Miguel Cotto? I don't think so. In December?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
Now, let's say that Saúl Canelo Álvarez loses to Triple G. Then it makes a little bit more sense to face the Miguel Cotto because it's still a big name.
I still wouldn't want to see that fight. I would rather see David Lemieux. I want to let David Lemieux to get a shot.
Yeah, but you're not going to throw in – you're not going to throw Saúl Canelo Álvarez against a David Lemieux coming off a loss to Triple G. You're going to look for something quite a little bit less dangerous
safer
than David Lemieux.
Right.
You know?
Right, which would be – yeah, which would be Cotto.
Miguel Cotto. But now is Cotto going to fight –
but I'm a savage. Canelo? I'm a savage, Felipe. I'm a thirsty ghoul. I want David Lemieux and Saúl Canelo Álvarez. Even if Canelo gets knocked out and beaten to the pulp, I still want to see that fight. So, whatever.
Well, I want to see it too, but I don't think we're going to see it in December. We might not even see Canelo Álvarez in December if he ends up losing to Triple G. I think he would hold off and fight Lemieux in May of 2018. But, you know, that's neither here or there. So, with that said, we reached the end of the rundown. David, you got anything else?
Yeah, if anybody wants to join the My Little Pony fan club, you guys can reach Felipe at fleon@live.com. Just to let anybody know, because some folks are asking about how do they get involved in the My Little Pony club.
Said, and if anybody guys,
hey,
out there, if you want to have David give your wife a pedicure, if you want David to go to your home and give your wife a pedicure like he did his wife for Mother's Day, you can do it too at leaveitinthering@gmail.com. You can find him there and set up your appointment.
I'm going to have a theme song for you. I don't know whether if I'm going to put a genuine theme song, my pony, or the actual
wow.
My Little Pony theme song and stuff. But, my fans, you want to call it 347-205-7598. Let's talk some boxing before we get into the good, the bad, the ugly, and, of course, douchebag of the week. Let's go area code 503. You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Yo, what up? This is Josue from Portland, Oregon. What up, Felipe? What up, David Duenas? How you guys doing?
Good,
I'm
Josue.
Doing good, man.
How
you doing, brother? What's on your mind, brother?
I'm doing good. Yeah. So I just wanted to comment real quick about you guys are talking about my favorite fighter, Miguel Cotto. You know, yeah, I'm joking. I'm gonna keep it respectful. I'm gonna be respectful. Miguel Cotto, man, I'm just happy to hear that you guys reported. I still haven't looked up the news myself, but if you guys reporting this news, then I 100%, believe in whatever and on the news you guys, talk about. And I'm happy to hear that, that's true. He got dropped by Roc Nation. That's 100%.
Well, that's what was reported by our colleague Steve Kim on the three knockdown rule with Mario Lopez. So, I mean, in my opinion, there is no better pursuer of the boxing news than Steve Kim. I mean, he gets the scoop. So, if he's saying it, I'm sure it's pretty close to the truth.
Right.
Oh, okay, yeah, man. Well, I just want to say, man, I'm happy to hear that because I've always thought Miguel Cotto was one of these delusional fighters that takes more, he's just more of a, more greedy, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like he thinks he deserves a lot more money than his opponent, and he's willing to take, like...
You can go ahead and say, he behaves like a diva sometimes.
He does. He definitely behaves like a diva, dude. Like, a guy you just can't respect, because, like, all this, like, you know, when he got the middleweight title, he had all these stipulations, and I just... You know what I mean? When you're gonna fight him, he wanted a certain weight and all this, and it just got on my nerves, man. Like, I just don't respect that, and I don't know when you have the when you have a world title as like the middleweight title he had, you fight at 160, and that's it. But he made you know, that other dude, I forget, Gale, or not Gale, what's his name, the Australian dude?
Gale.
He made
Gale.
Him come down.
Gale, right.
Gale, yeah. He made him come down to, I believe it was 157. And I don't know, I just thought it was, you know, I just don't like these cheaters, you know what I mean? I don't like these people that, you know, bend the rules to get an advantage, you know? So that's one thing I've never respected
right.
about Miguel Cotto.
Well, in his defense, okay, is Miguel Cotto, you got to remember this, when Miguel Cotto was coming up and he had to fight the A-listers, he had to really submit to what their terms were. So he's not doing anything that's new. He had to do it with Manny Pacquiao. He had to fight Manny Pacquiao to catchweight. Floyd Mayweather. You know, so the guys had to kind of jump the hoops in order to get where he was at. And I think he just felt it's only right to do the exact same things to other fighters that were trying to take his position. So he used the advantages that were used against him. So it's his right to act like that. He's not the first fighter to have to use that those methods. Floyd Mayweather is notorious to do that. But yeah, it is a turnoff for us fight fans. You know, I'm certainly turned off to certain tactics that fighters use to have a leverage.
Yeah, that's one thing about the sport that I don't like, man. Like when people try to take advantage like that. But I get it. You know what I mean? When you're the B side and the A side forces you to do something, you know, it's part of the sport. It's never gonna die. You know, there'll always be a person that's the B side, and then there's always the A side. So I mean, I get it, I understand, but I don't know. I just Miguel Cotto being Puerto Rican, kind of you know, I mean, there's a Mexican Puerto Rican war, right? There's a you know
right.
what I mean? We're fighting them, and they're fighting us. So you know, I don't know. So but yeah, man, I don't want to take up too much time. I just wanted to talk about that Miguel Cotto real quick, you know, and just want to say real quick, I can't wait for the Kell Brook Errol Spence fight. And one fight that no one's talking about is my favorite fighter. This is actually my favorite fighter, or one of my favorite fighters, is Mike Alvarado. He's on the undercard of Michael Conlan, and I'm very looking forward to that because I mean that's a blood and guts warrior, and I love the brawlers. I love the guys that you know come to fight and willing to like draw blood to go for the kill and just you know and be in a competitive fight. So I just wanted to mention that real quick, and I want to thank you guys for having me on.
Hey, man. Thank you for calling in, brother. Really appreciate it. Take care.
Cool. Thank you.
I wonder if Josue helped Alvarado get that SUV out of that lake a couple years ago.
Right, yeah. Yeah. All right, you want to get into the good and the bad and the ugly here, Felipe, and then I'm not
Let's
calling you exactly what you are. Go for it.
Well, then, are you going to play the theme song?
I'm about to do it. Give me a minute here, mister.
Jeez.
The good.
Me, Felipe.
The bad.
David Winger.
The ugly.
Felipe Leon.
David Winger.
And there you have it, the theme song to The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly here on the Leave It in the Ring Network. The Good coming off, Triple G versus Canelo. Finally announced, we're going to be seeing that fight September 16th. Not only is it a great fight on paper, not only is it an expected good fight inside the ring, but with what we've been hearing about the different venues of where it may land, hopefully Dallas, in Dallas, Texas at the AT&T Stadium, the home of the Dallas Cowboys, it might be a huge, huge event. And for me, this is what this fight deserves to be. It deserves to be a huge, huge event on par with Anthony Joshua of Vladimir Klitschko.
You know, great fight for Triple G. I'm not so sure for Canelo just yet, but I do think that Canelo brings some tools to this fight that may be enough to keep him in the fight with Triple G. I'm not completely sure that Triple G is going to blow him out, but I think that Triple G poses the power and the skill set to puzzle and hurt Canelo Alvarez. It happens in Dallas. You better be sure. If it does happen in Dallas, Texas, you better be sure Felipe Leon's going to be riding in his pony, all shirtless with his little cowboy boots and his little pink hat. Okay, the bad, Felipe. What do you got?
Anyways, you know, I don't agree with you so much in the fact that even if Canelo Alvarez loses, it's gonna be a bad event for him, because one thing you could
say
about, you said that you didn't think that it was gonna be such a mega event for Canelo Alvarez. You just said that right now.
I said, I said that because we don't know. Like I said, nothing was answered with the Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Fight.
No.
So
yeah,
there's still things out there that to be answered that we don't know that he could do. You know what I mean?
Unless he gets knocked down in the first three rounds and he just...
I don't think he's going to get knocked down those three.
Yeah, I don't think so.
That ain't going to happen.
Unless he gets completely destroyed in the first three rounds, then I'm pretty sure Canelo Alvarez, with his discipline, his skill set, because he's a good fighter. He's going to put up a fight.
Oh, he's going to put up a good fight. Yeah.
So even in losing, he still might win. You know, he still might win because he's going to give him the credibility that he's been longing for from the Mexican audience. You know, the Mexican audience still, a big segment of the Mexican audience, even though he beat Chavez Jr., a big segment of the Mexican army still does not want to put all their eggs in the Canelo basket, you know?
You can't, even, because there was no – I mean, look, that's why I said you can't blame Canelo. And I've told this to a lot of people. You know, you can't be upset with Canelo. He showed up. But, yeah,
but
I understand. The thirst wasn't quenched.
Yeah, but even if he loses this fight and he loses in an honorable way, you know, going in there, going out on his shield or giving it all throughout the rounds, then I think those people are going to say, you know what, he lost, but, you know, he might not, he went in and did what he needed to do, and he tried his best, which is something you really can't say about Chavez Jr. at this point.
Well, yeah, most definitely. What is the bad on the list here?
The bad was Ward dissing the face-off and, in turn, the hand that feeds them, HBO, and by not showing up to that scheduled, and obviously disrespecting, not that I think he cares all that much, but disrespecting Sergey Kovalev as his opponent, you know. And I think, like you say, maybe that was his strategy to really get into Kovalev's head and disrespect him. You know, there was tweets and there was comments made by Main Event and Sergey Kovalev afterwards. But honestly, didn't get a lot of traction. Not a lot of people were kind of like shocked or surprised that Andre Ward would pull such a tactic.
Yeah, they were pissed, though. I mean, fans. Yeah, his
Sergey
fans got to be a little disappointed, you know, because they wanted to see this happen. So there is a disrespect to the fans, too. You got to admit that.
His fans are saying what you're saying. He's using it as a strategic tactic. So they're saying the same thing that you're saying. I don't think
I'm going to go back and look because there's three fans. He's got three fans. Let me look on Twitter here. There's three fans
now,
here.
Of course,
Sergey Kovalev
was. Of course, Sergey Kovalev was pissed because he had to break camp. He left. He wasn't planning to go to that weekend to Las Vegas. He broke camp at Big Bear, and he traveled to Las Vegas to be there for the face-off. I mean, I would want to go drive to Oakland and knock on Ward's door and say, what the hell, man? I mean, that's completely disrespectful. But maybe
no,
that's
you don't want to drive to Oakland. That'd be the dumbest thing and stuff. You know, I mean, he's a great fighter, but Oakland's not the place to go and try to pull out the son of Oakland Ward.
Well,
that's a bad move. But anyway,
I don't think Andre Ward is living on what's the bad part of Oakland. You know, he's in a safe neighborhood. We could say that, right? I mean, it's not like he lives in Modesto.
No, but if he still trains at the same center, it isn't enough. It isn't a rough neighborhood and stuff. You know, Oakland's not that bad, to tell you the truth, and it really isn't. You know, there's more of a, it's just one of those things. You know, there's bad parts.
I had a little incident going through Oakland one time, and I'm not too fond of it. I mean, I got friends there. My big shout out to my boy Troy King, Troy King. You know Troy King is my buddy.
I got a lot of good friends. I used to visit Oakland a lot.
Big shout out to my girl
King.
Raquel Miller. But
what is this big boy in the morning?
I had a little incident on the train late at night going through Oakland, so I'm not going to get into it here. But
of course you're going to have a bad incident in the train in the middle of the night, Felipe.
Yeah.
Jesus.
But anyway,
right, let's get to the ugly. Let's go
to the ugly, Chavez Jr. not coming to fight. I mean, that was a big letdown for everybody. Not only the guys that had picked him, like, you know, David Duenas did, and the guys that, you know, there was a lot of Chavez fans over
won.
There. There was a lot of Chavez fights over there in Vegas. When I got to Vegas on Friday morning, I thought that it was going to be very excited for Canelo. I mean, everybody where you would walk, you would see people with Canelo shirts and Canelo headbands and things like that. But once we got into the weigh-in, you know, it was 50-50. Once it was in the weigh-in, it was 50-50. And at the fight, it was 50-50. So there was a lot of people that left very disappointed that day because of Chavez Jr. not fighting. I don't think that the majority of those people really thought that Chavez Jr. was going to win this fight, but at least they expected, being the son of who he is, to put up a fight, and that was the biggest disappointment ever. If Chavez Jr. would have gone in there and fought like he fought last December, coming off a year and a half layover, you know, against Dominic Bridge, where he threw punches, he didn't look all that great, but he threw punches and got the win. Even if he would have done that and would have lost at the end, people would have been, hey, well, you know what, it is what it is. He lost to a better fighter. He got weight drained, whatever the case may be. But for him to only land 77 punches and only throw a little bit over 300, that was the biggest disappointment of that night. Of the year.
Oh, man.
Of the year so far. Can you say?
Let me ask you this.
That's the biggest disappointment of the year so far?
Oh, by far. Let me ask you this. You were there live in the crowd. Was there Mexicanos that at least started screaming out culero to him during the fight?
Oh, yeah. The second half of the fight, you could hear it. And boos and the culero chant and all that stuff. You know, when they started chanting the culero chant, so I said, what? David Duenas is here and he didn't tell me he was coming?
Culero, right? No,
yeah,
I thought
I thought they recognized you and they were calling your name, but obviously you weren't there.
Yeah, whatever. All right, so let's get down to the
boxing's
biggest douchebag of the week.
Of the week. Well, the last 2 weeks.
Of the last 2 weeks here. But let's go. Let's drum roll, please. Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. getting that award as the douchebag, or as we would say it in Spanish, el más puto, for not showing up for the fight. And I think the biggest would be, let me ask you this, man, because we didn't even talk about this. How much in belief were you about the whole video, and I got a Molly in my drink, and I got all drugged there, and they took my money and my watch, and my wife, you know, and his wife even stepped up. She's like, I believe him because he's so good to me.
You know, he actually came out today with his official version of what happened, and he's very he mentions in his statements that he was more interested in convincing his wife that he didn't do anything with those women, that he actually spoke to one of the guys that were in that room and made him convince his wife that he didn't do what everybody thinks that he did with those young ladies of the night in Las Vegas. but, you know, don't you want a wife like that, though, that it's obvious she got caught with her hand in the cookie jar and she still comes up and backs you up?
She's back.
That's a real Mexican wife right there, baby.
That's not a real Mexican wife. That's a woman that understands he just got $5 million, $10 million in the bank account.
But listen to this, David. I mean, I'm not saying that behind closed doors she's not beating the shit out of him and rolling her eye, everything he says is like, you know how they are. he'll be like,
yeah,
man, I'm really hungry this morning. And she'll be like, were you really hungry that morning? You know, that morning when you
yeah.
were with those.
Why don't you call that bitch that you were fucking around with and all that and get
yeah.
her over here to cook for you then?
that's behind closed doors. And he's been doing
right,
that
yeah.
for years. But
mm-hmm.
in front of the public, she's saving face.
Because
obviously she has her girlfriend saying, you're going to stay with him? After he did that, after that video of that girl grabbing his stomach and showing her ass, you know, you're going to
yep.
stay with him? She's saving face like every good Mexican woman does and says, hey, he was drugged, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, every good Mexican woman says, you know, I'm not going to let this, some other chick take, you know, what I've earned,
yeah.
what I've
exactly.
worked hard for, you know what I
yeah.
mean? So. But so he makes, you know, douchebag of the week, most definitely. Good try, though. I give him that. You know, was it the smartest line to use in terms of saying, you know, hey, I got drugged. You could have came up with something better.
Hey, let me tell you this. Let me tell you this, David. You're a part. You like to have your little drinky drink every once in a while. You pretty much every once in a while, you know, every weekend.
what? No, I don't ride around in a pony shirtless, Felipe.
But there were
fights.
You know, once you put your pedicure tools down, you like to enjoy a good beer. You know,
mm-hmm.
there were some pictures that came out after the fight where they show Canelo Alvarez, you know, partying it up at a club, obviously behind a velvet rope in a VIP area.
And he was kissing some girl, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's his girlfriend.
His old
and,
lady.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he actually had dinner with his whole team and a bunch of friends and family, and they actually closed down a restaurant at the MGM after the fight just to
mm-hmm.
be able to host that dinner. But, you know, who would you really rather have a beer with? You know, who's really putting it down in the party area? You know, Julio Sanchez having dinner, who was wasted and people making videos with him, and it was hilarious. Or, you know, behind some velvet rope at some club, you know, where you can't even talk to the girls because you're behind this closed off area. You know, who would you rather have a beer with?
Oh man, I don't know. I mean, I'm a solo kind of guy. I have my beer by myself.
Wow.
I'm not I see what you're
so
trying to do. What do you
so
think I'm stupid? My old lady's sitting right behind me, cabron. Why in the hell would I answer that question? That's a trick question, first off.
So basically, you like to drink by yourself. That's like an alcoholic. So basically, you're admitting here that you're
yes.
an alcoholic.
Hey, well, I'll tell you this. Basically, you'll never see me on camera and then making up a stupid excuse later on. That's the basically there. Okay?
Yeah. You need a 12-step program, my friend.
Yeah, well. That's either here or there and stuff. But anyways, hey, Fight Fans, thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to help us out with the Patreon. Don't forget every Monday you got the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya. On Wednesdays you got Leave It in the Ring with myself, Dave Duenas, and Felipe Jinx Leon. And then on every other Thursday you got the 2-minute
quick,
round.
Quick programming, you know, we're not going to have a 2-minute round till about June 15th because we have some traveling to do. David Avila and myself are going to be doing some traveling. And unfortunately, it lands on those Thursdays that we have scheduled for the show. So our next show for the 2-minute round, your Hooked and Jabbed look at the female fight world, will be on June 15th. But we're going to go over all the fights that have transpired in the female fight world. We've seen some changing of the guard in the super flyweight division. So we're going to go over all those fights on June 15th here on the Leave It in the Ring Network.
Well, there you go. There you go. This is the end of our show here. So, everybody, have a good night. Enjoy the weekend. Don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer. Felipe, like always, brother, it's always fun to shoot the shit here about boxing. I will talk to you next week.
All righty. Have a good one.